WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively putting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour together. I have put the aggressive schedule up right now at Baltimore Positive. You can check it out. I've been out on social media. Got at least a dozen Crab Cake Tour stops coming this summer to all kinds of places, including our friends at Costas. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, letting ourselves play. Got the Lucky Sevens going on, the home run riches, but of course, the instant lottery scratch-offs and the 50th anniversary, the way to go. With donation, our friends, 2 years, 0% financing. You buy two, you get two free. It is summertime. You know how that goes. If you have older creaky windows, 866-90-NATION, they take great care of us. As do our friends at Costas. I ate some crabs on Sunday night. Luke was my first crab endeavor of the year. It was pre-inspired for the very first time in a long, long time by an Orioles game. The Orioles played a 4:05 game on a Sunday afternoon in San Francisco. Everybody was wearing orange and black. It confused me a little bit. But the Orioles come out of the weekend in decent shape on the road. And I know you and I and even Dennis and Leonard last week, all of our conversations, they're stumbling a little bit. They stubbed their toe. Pitcher's no good. Outfielder gets hurt. And I start to look at it and say, you know, as long as they're swimming along playing 500 ball and not losing every series. I mean, oh, they lost the series last week. My God, we used to lose two series every time we played one around here, right?
No question about it. And as I wrote late last week at BaltimorePositive.com, look, it was not pushing the panic button or anything like that, but it was an acknowledgement of not so much the 2-4 homestand, but
this ain't the 27 Yankees.
But all the bad news that came along with that, it was the John Means setback, the Dylan Tate setback, Grayson Rodriguez being sent back to Norfolk, Cedric Mullins getting hurt. I mean, you go down the list, the bullpen, you know, at least the middle bullpen.
Real bad news, like legitimate bad news, right?
Yeah. I mean, just, and for me, it was looking at the bullpen a little bit, and we've been talking about this for weeks and weeks. I mean, the bullpen's the biggest reason why the Orioles are where they are right now. Let's be clear about that. However, when you're playing as many close games as the Orioles play, and that's why Sunday was great, that qualified as a blowout for the Orioles. They won by five rather than four or fewer. I mean, that's just how they've been all year. It's rarely been easy. For me, it was just the first real sign of a warning shot, a first real sign of some legit adversity. And look what they did. They go out to San Francisco, go against the Giants team that's not terrible, but not great. And they take two out of three. And when you do that, first team in the majors to 20 road wins this year, they accomplished that on Sunday. You know, you just feel that much better. And now you look at the schedule, and one thing that was talked about going into the month of June after May was just so tough, you know, just such a rigid gauntlet of opponents that they were facing, is looking at June and saying, okay, not that it's all easy, but you have a bunch of off days built in to the schedule, which if you're talking about a bullpen that is working as hard as this bullpen has worked, and specifically talking about Bautista, Yennier Cano, Brian Baker, Danny Coulomb, Mike Bauman on Sunday doing what he did, it's nice to have those off days built in. And also, couple that with the fact that, you know, you're starting rotation right now with Grayson Rodriguez subtracted. You know, there's a little bit of uncertainty there as far as, you know, Voth or Bruce Zimmerman or someone else making starts for the time being. So it's great to get a road series win. It's very much a reminder that, yeah, they had a 2-4 homestand. They lost back-to-back series. Every team in baseball, whether you're the best or you're the worst, you're going to have stretches like that over the course of 162. So it was never, for me, about the fact that they had lost a few games. It was much more just a really rotten run of news. You know, we talked about it coinciding with the City Connect and saying, oh, are those uniforms cursed or, you know, whatever. But nice to see them dust themselves off. They had the off day, then they go to San Francisco and take two out of three. Now, what more can you ask for on the road? I mean, that's just what you're looking for. No matter who the opponent is, you win series on the road, you're doing something right. And now they have a chance to recalibrate and go to Milwaukee and see if they can do it again before they come home later this week.
I'm not a magic number guy in June, but the magic number to me is how many games over 500 they are. That, you know, that to me, that's a magic number to say 15 games over 500. Let's not get that down to 8 or 9. You know what I mean? And it's been hovering 15, 16, 17, 14 for a period of a week or two. And I think to myself, when that gets from 15 to 20, then you got problem. That's how I judge it at this point, because it used to be we have to win the division. And then we had the 95, we got to be a wild card. Now you just have to be like a 90-win team, kind of, sort of, right? So for me, the magic number is not getting that 15 above 500 down into single digits, right? Once it gets into single digits, now all of a sudden you're starting to look at, oh, we're an 88 win team, or we're, you know, we're, that's the kind of team you are. As long as they stay at that pace, lose two out of three, fine. You come back, you win two out of three, good. Even it out, 15 over 500, that's a good magic number.
Yeah, no question about it. I wholeheartedly agree. And I think what you said is fair in terms of where you don't want it to go, because, I mean, just look at the rest of this division. I mean, you have the Red Sox hovering in last place, and they're still, they've kind of been 500, a game above 500 right there. I mean, you have an entire division that is still, mathematically speaking, very much in it. Maybe not for the division title, but as you mentioned, when you have three wild cards, it changes pretty dramatically. So, we talked about this back in April. It continued in May with such a good May that they had against such tough opponents on the schedule, that the more wins you stack now, the easier it becomes later in the season. Not to say that you settle for being 15 over or 16 over or 20 over, whatever it is, but you just keep yourself in great position that you can endure a rough homestand like the Orioles had last week, or you can endure a road trip that doesn't go quite as well as you wanted to, or you know, you go through a run where you have a couple injuries like the Orioles have had here recently. It's just you're giving yourself some margin for error, and that's something that, as much as they haven't had much of that on a night-to-night basis because they always play these close games, they have stacked enough wins over the first 2 months of the season to give themselves some margin for error. Now,
they
could
stink for 2 weeks and still be 10 games over 500 and then rally back and have the run that they're going to need. That they're going to need to win games, right? I mean, and even over the weekend, it wasn't like all that impressive in San Francisco, but I'm sitting there at Costas and they're, you know, they're holding 7-0 lead. And, you know, at the end, I guess it got a little more nervous. I mean, Cano actually gave up like hits and stuff. But the idea that like, they can stub their toe a little bit. This is as fun a season as I'm thinking of 31 years on the radio. There was 97, there was 14. Go ahead. Name me another one where we wake up in June in 31 years and we're watching, hey, maybe there'll be 20 over 500. I mean, this is not, it's not the way this franchise has been. It's not the way this fan base over 31 years has had their mind. They're used to looking up at the Yankees or the Red Sox playing this kind of baseball, and the Rays, I guess, in modern era. But to an old guy like me, you know, my dad wouldn't recognize this, and he saw a lot of winning baseball. They're as good can be when you're playing 650 ball.
No question. And I think what's even interesting about that, I'll take it a step further. Most of the Earl Weaver Orioles, most of those teams kind of started a little more slowly, and then they took off.
Well, they had Cuellar.
Right. Well, of course. But the point is, for them to be, you know, where they were in April and in May and being 10 plus games over 500, I mean, that's territory that even the glory days didn't necessarily see it early in the season. It was much more the Orioles were, they started a little slowly and then they would take off as the year went on, which I think that's part of something that Brandon Hyde's talked about. And we'll continue to talk about this as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline. I mean, we're still, you know, close to 2 months out. So there's still a lot of time to kind of see how this is going to shake out, not just for the Orioles, but other teams in terms of who's buyers and sellers. But Brandon Hyde talked about this on the last homestand is, and he's been, you know, he was part of that coaching staff for the Cubs, you know, when they did what they did not too long ago. And he talked about the idea of wanting to be better in the second half of the season than you are in the first half of the season. And that's going to be the big challenge for the Orioles. They've started so well. And I don't necessarily even mean that your record over the second half has to be better than it was over the first half. But in terms of, are you improving? Oh, are you doing things better than you did earlier in the season? I mean, we talked about this very early on. You know, the Orioles kicked the ball around a lot defensively the first 2-3 weeks of the season. Since then, it's been better. Now, can the defense continue to get better? Sure, they still have some lapses here and there. But the point is, you want to get better in every phase of the game. And that's Brandon Hyde talking about that in terms of lots of playoff teams. And I just mentioned the Earl Weaver era and the glory days of the Orioles. They were notoriously known for being a much better team in the second half of the season than they were in the first. So as much as you love the margin for error, as much as they have that and they can endure some rocky spells here and there, and they're going to have some of that. I mean, that's just the truth, especially when you play so many close games. You're going to lose some close games then. And we've seen some of that for the Orioles. But are you able to position yourself in a way that you can be better over the second half of the season and One, make the playoffs, and two, be in position where you can make some noise in the playoffs. So long way to go for that. Everyone understands that. But again, on the heels of what was just a rough week, again, for me, it wasn't even about going 2-4 and, oh, you lost to the Rangers and, oh, you lost to Cleveland in the series. That's going to happen. But for me, it was just all the tough news that they endured along the way. It was really encouraging to see them go out to San Francisco and play good baseball. And, you know, Saturday was a little, you know, that was listless, a late Saturday night game. And, you know, they just didn't swing the bats well. But to come back the way they did on Sunday, you know, they get the big third inning, drawing walks, you know, doing different. I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Josh Lester, you know, another name where we're talking about someone who's
every night there's a different star. That's the magic of Oriole baseball. You know, like we're sitting in David Katz is with me. He's like, McCann, who's this guy? The O'Hearn guy. Like they like you're expecting it to be Henderson, Rutschman, and that's not baseball, though. I mean, I was there like Kiko Garcia hit the home run to beat the Red Sox in 79. I'm like every baseball card. They're, you know, somebody got Jim Dwyer got pinch hits, you know, back in the day. So you think about these names. It's not just always about the stars. It really is, especially when it comes to pitching. It is about Bruce Zimmerman putting a good start together at some point here now that he's been called up in the local kid. That's a plug for my friends at Fadley's because he grew up serving crab cakes in there. But he comes back into this and you're like, oh, where the hell's he been? Well, he's going to toe the rubber. And he's going to give them a chance to win. And 3 weeks ago, he's toiling away. And you're thinking, is he going to contribute to this great team? Now he has a chance. And he might get beaten up. I don't know. But he has a chance to come back and be part of a hometown special thing. A little more special even than pitching last year.
Yeah. Oh, no question about it. And we'll see what his role is. I mean, what he did on Saturday night was he gave them a couple innings and saved the rest of their bullpen and gave them a better chance to win on Sunday than as a result. So, I mean,
well, you got the really blowout you wanted on Sunday. I make sure your ears must have been buzzing when they're up 7-0. I said to Cats, I'm like, hey, Luke says they need to blow more teams out so they can put Bauman in the pitch or whatever. But then they brought Cano in. I mean, there came a point where Brandon wanted to get pitchers some work on the West Coast.
Well, I mean, it got to the point where they were up 4 and you're saying, okay, let's stop it right here. You know, you had a 7-run lead. Let's not make this anymore. And then they tackle on a run and then you didn't have to pitch Batista in the 9th. I mean,
well, Katz was talking about never going back to Costas if they blew the game. You know what I mean?
right,
don't do that. Don't blame it on the crabs. Crabs were delicious, but it did sort of, I thought to him, I said, man, they blow a game at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night. They were up 7-0. Oh boy, you know, God, don't blow this one. You got to get out of here 2 out of 3. You got to get on the plane, ride, fly back east, having won this game. You can't lose that. You can't lose Sunday.
Yeah. And that's where I kind of go back to it. And I felt this way about the game that they did win against Cleveland. Remember, that was another game where they had a 7-run lead. And then before you know it, they're having to use Cano and Batista. And that's what I'm talking about with these blowouts. It's not because of their run differential or anything statistically, Nestor. It's when you get in a position where you have a chance to run away from a team, do it. Because then you can save some of your high leverage relievers. And that was kind of my point. And that's why, you know, the one thing that if there was a disappointment to take away from Sunday, it was, you know, Tyler Wells, as good as he looked for such stretches of that game. I mean, he strikes out 9 in 5 1/3 innings. You know, when you're staked to that kind of lead, you'd like to at least get through 6, right?
I thought it was the 7th when he came out, and I looked up. He's like 5 1/3. I'm like,
yeah.
You feel, you know, I said to Dave, well, they got some length out of him. I said that. And then I looked up, and I'm like, oh, it's only the 6th. Because the first 5 innings flew along. We didn't even have the
right
yet. So, like, we're watching the game, and I did think of you right away and thought, this is going to be a pitching debate because this is not what you want when you're up 7-0, for sure.
Yeah, and it's not to say that that Brandon Hyde should have left him in longer. I mean, he was at 102 pitches. He gave up the home run. I mean, Tyler Wells, we've talked about it. I've talked about it with some people on Twitter as well, you know, going back and forth. I mean, you see a progression with him in terms of the stuff. I mean, he's missing more bats. He's striking out more people, and that's great to see. You look at his whip. I mean, he entered Sunday best in the American League. I mean, he has not given up many hits. He doesn't walk many guys. However, the long balls hurt him, and he does pitch into some deep counts, and that's hurt him in terms of trying to get a little bit more length. And I've talked about this. You know, we've talked about the blowout, you know, the lack of blowout wins in jest, but we've talked about this in terms of how the Orioles sustain this, not just for the first couple months of the season, but doing it for the long haul. It comes down to two things for me. Can your starters get a little bit deeper into games? And can you get a little more consistency out of your middle relief? And, you know, we saw over the weekend, Michael Givens goes on the IL. We had talked about some of his struggles. Cionel Perez has not been the same guy as we saw last year. So, you know, they need to find more consistency in that part of their bullpen, but that can be remedied a little bit. You can alleviate some of that concern by having your starters get a little bit deeper. So, you know, we saw
you
that with Wells.
Alleviate that when you have a 3-2 lead and you bring Cano and Batista in and you actually win the game. You know, everybody's feeling good after the game. That's different than struggling in the fifth, sixth, and giving the game away with Cionel Perez or giving the game away with maybe Bruce Zimmerman. You know, I mean, because they're going to be reaching to those pitchers in tighter games. But to your point, tight games is what they do, you know, and that situationally probably makes all their guys stronger later in the year. I mean, it makes every bat a little sharper. You know, even when they were tacking on runs late, I'm like, yeah, they need a ninth inning runs in a 4-run game, but get them, you know, don't think that those runs are for tomorrow night. Get them tonight.
Right. Exactly. And they were able to do that, you know, with Aaron Hicks, with the trip. We haven't even mentioned him.
He's yeah, been say his name
nice
twice. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Lift
Come
for
on.
Them, at least in the short term. I'm not sure it's Aaron Hicks, former Yankee center fielder, Aaron Hicks, who 4 years ago and before then had been a quite a good player, but certainly has had his struggles. But to his credit, he's given them some nice contributions here in the early
Yankees
going.
Yankees paid him for that hit, by the way.
They did. Handsomely they paid him. But you know, the point is, you just said it, they're winning these close games. And I will say this, and this is where I will defend Brandon Hyde and I will defend the Orioles. As much as we've talked about the bullpen and the starters, go look at the numbers. There's not anything extraordinarily out of whack with how they, you know, the innings for their starters compared to the innings for the bullpen. I mean, this is baseball in 2023. And yeah, there are teams who have starters who can go 7 or maybe 8, and you'll see some of that, but you don't see nearly as much of that as you used to. And
if you do, you only have one
design.
Guy, right? That's good. You don't have three
right.
guys to get to the 7. This isn't Maddox, Glavin, and Smoltz anymore. That's all over.
Yeah, I mean, the Mets try, you know, they try to have it with Scherzer and Verlander, and you have some teams who have more of that than others, but for the most part, it's, hey, go out there, throw hard, max effort, 5 innings, and we'll see where we are after that. And if we're, you know, if you're at 95 pitches at 5 innings, we're probably going to the bullpen. And that's just how baseball is played today. And I know a lot of people hearing that will cringe, and I get that to a point, but that's just where we are. So that's where I will stick up for the way the Orioles are winning these games and say, there are lots of teams that do this. Go look at how many bullpen innings Tampa Bay has tossed this year. I mean, the Rays, Kevin Cash, notorious. We saw this in the World Series a couple years ago.
But that's their structure. They're built to do that. They right. They build off seasons to put arms together to make sure they have enough Cionel Perez's and Bruce Zimmerman's, right? Like, literally. Well,
it's that, and it's also third time through the order penalty where they say, you know what? We're not going to live in the world of the old school where it was the manager going off of a gut feeling, right? It's the idea of, okay, this guy's approaching the top of the order again. Are we going to have him go through, get into trouble? Then we're putting our bullpen in a tough spot. Or are we going to be proactive and we're going to pull this guy maybe a couple batters earlier than we'd like, but we want to keep our bullpen in a position where they're not coming in with the bases loaded or something like that. So it's a mentality. It's a mindset change shift that we've seen in recent years. And, you know, the Orioles aren't unique to that. So much of it, you know, when we look at innings, we look at pitch counts, all these different things, and we ask these questions. And so many of these numbers that we toss around, and, you know, we see this with young guys, with innings limits and things of that nature. So much of it's still arbitrary, and there's still so much unknown in terms of how much is too much or how much is not enough in terms of these, you know, innings and pitch counts and things of that nature. So the reality is they have lots of player tracking data beyond a pitch count, beyond the number of innings that they throw, that can really measure how effective a pitcher is. They can measure indicators of, is there something going on here? Is his release point dropping? Is there something else with his arm angle? Whatever it might be, that they have lots of data, and most of it proprietary, where they're looking at it and they're trying to judge and gauge where these different pitchers are. So, you know, Brandon Hyde, and that's not just a Brandon Hyde call. When they talk about going to the bullpen or how many pitches a starter is going to go, that's a collaborative effort that goes in. And yes, Brandon Hyde makes the move in the moment, but those decisions, those scenarios are talked about, they're scrimmaged, They're practiced in terms of, you know, when are we going to do this? And so, you know, there's so much that goes into it, but the Orioles, the way they're operating with their pitching, it's, you see lots of teams do this, and I'm not saying it's the right way. I'm not saying it's better than it was 20 years ago or 40 years ago.
Well, they think it's the right way because they put research into this and they've spent a lot of money and a lot of time saying Jim Palmer's wrong. Even though he pitched 400 complete games, that's not what we believe our organization's going to do. It's not 1968 anymore.
Well, and it's not even that, hey, Jim Palmer's adapted, you know, some of his ideas. And now it doesn't mean that he would have wanted it to be that way when he pitched, but he understands, you know, elements of what they're doing and how much they're using technology and StatCast and all the different tracking that they do. But, you know, it really, you know, it's when you look at what they're doing, again, it feels there's this quick feeling to say, oh, this isn't sustainable. And I'm guilty of that as much as anyone, you know, when you look at it on a night by night basis. But again, then you look at the numbers and you say, all right, well, you know, their starters aren't leading the league in innings. Let me be clear about that. But it's not as though they're dead last either. And yeah, their bullpen's working a lot, but they're not first in bullpen innings either. So you kind of look at it and say, okay, well, there are lots of teams that kind of proceed like the Orioles are. So that's why I said, you know, over time, yeah, you'd like to get a little more from your starters, and we'll see how that plays out. Hey, last year, remember Kramer and Bradish and guys like that, they were really good the last couple months of the season. So maybe it's part of keeping those guys healthy for that part of the season. And then we'll see, you know, how the bullpen shakes out over the course of 6 months. But in the meantime, we can keep belaboring that point. But in the meantime, boy, it's fun. This team continues to win games. And even when they have a rough stretch, like they did on this last homestand, they come right back and they win a series in San Francisco against the Giants.
Milwaukee Brewers, they used to be in our league, the Harvey's Wallbangers, all that good stuff. Bernie Brewer, hopefully they'll keep him out of the suds the next couple of days. Birds get a day off. Big week around here. Luke is easy to find out at Baltimore Luke, as well as out in Owings Mills when the other birds are flying off to Milwaukee. They get home this weekend. The Ravens have mandatories coming up. If you see a guy that looks like Lamar Jackson running around town, it might be. So we got football and baseball in the brain, some concerts, some summertime, and the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. Presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-DAY. Should be telling you more about that. Lots and lots of dates, lots of conversations. The governor, the mayor, they're all coming on the program this summer. We are full steam ahead. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Stay with us. We never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.